Tonight's story, we are diving into a couple brothers and their uncle who go camping off the shore of the Mississippi River, but realize they are in immediate danger. Then we are heading off to Crow Hill Park, where kids have been mysteriously stabbed and some even missing, and this is why. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. This story took place in 2013. It was the beginning of summer, and me and my brother Wes had just gotten to my Uncle Matt's house in Mayersville, which is a couple of miles from the nearby Mississippi River. Uncle Matt gave us both his famous Matt hugs as we entered. After we had unpacked, we had a few drinks, since Wes finally turned 21 last month, since I'm only a year older. But he had been drunk before on several occasions. We just chatted about nonsensical stuff, playing pool, all the fun stuff. The next day we left to go camping, since our Aunt Melissa was away on a business trip. As we were driving, my uncle told us there may be gators and bull sharks at the Mississippi River. But then he told us that he had seen something much worse down there when he was about our age. He spoke of a 7 or 8 foot tall lake monster that resembled a more monstrous version of the creature from the Black Lagoon. "You gotta be pulling our chain," Wes said. "No, my boy, it's all true. I saw him when I was fishing for a walleye. When I was reeling in my catch, it actually had the balls to try and take my fish. I thought it was a bull shark at first, until I reeled in the head of the walleye, and I saw them glowing eyes under the water. I almost shit myself when I got a better look at it." My brother still didn't believe it, but he gave my Uncle Matt the benefit of the doubt. But I was quite intrigued. My uncle was 6'4 and lifted weights every day. The guy is practically built like Vin Diesel. He is usually never scared of anything, so if this thing managed to do it, it must have been a big deal. When we parked at the camping spot, we walked down to the trail next to the small beach connected to the river. We unpacked our camping gear, fishing gear, and Uncle Matt's M14 rifle, which he kept in a special case. After setting up our tents, me and Wes went into the woods to get some firewood. When dusk set in, we were cooking the two walleyes we had caught. When Wes was cooking the potatoes, I heard the water splash near the shallow part of the beach. "What the hell was that?" I said. "Probably a catfish," Wes told me. The splashing then happened again before it stopped once more. "Hope that ain't a gator," Uncle Matt said. "No way, not out here," Wes said. We were then listening to the song Asylum by Disturbed while we were eating. When we finished, I shot my girlfriend some pictures of the walleyes we had caught before stuffing the phone in my pocket. Wes went to take a piss out in the bushes while the rest of us ate. "Hope there ain't no snake in them bushes," Uncle Matt said, sipping a beer. "Funny," Wes called out. I then decided to take a dip in the river since it was hot as hell that day. After taking off my white tank top, I changed into my bathing suit before jumping in. My Uncle Matt was reading a hardcover copy of the book It, while Wes was playing a game on his phone. When I went underwater for the second time, I felt something like a hand tightly grab at my left calf. I opened my eyes in the blurry water to barely make out some sort of humanoid fish thing with sharp spikes on its back. I kicked it as hard as I could, several times, until it finally relented when I gave it a good kick to what I assumed was its face. I darted out of the water, screaming like a banshee towards my Uncle Matt and Wes. I noticed 3 big, but not severe or fatal cuts on my calf.
"What the hell happened?" Uncle Matt asked.
"There's something in the water,"
I said as he grabbed the first aid kit out of his tent.
"What are you talking about?" Wes said. "I saw it. It wasn't a bull shark. It was something else. Some kind of fish with arms, I said.
Uncle Matt comes out with gauze and antiseptic. He cleans and dresses my wound before wrapping my calf in gauze.
Did you get a look at it? Uncle Matt asked.
Sorta. It was the size of a man, probably bigger. And it had these spikes on its back, I said.
Shit, that has to be the monster from the story, Wes stated.
Oh, so now you believe it? I snarked.
Well, what kind of fish leaves a precise scratch like that? Wes replied.
My uncle then stands frozen, looking at the river. I and Wes go to see what's wrong. When we both freeze in fear as well, when we see the two glowing eyes of the yellowish-green color from underwater. They were completely devoid of any irises or pupils, just practically COD zombie-style eyes.
What the F is that?
Wes asked, now sweating. Uncle Matt runs to retrieve his rifle. He fires four rounds into the water to scare it off. When the waves in the water from the bullets settle, the eyes were gone.
Looks like it left for now, Uncle Matt said.
What if it comes back? I asked.
We got weapons, so if it comes, we could hopefully just light it up, Uncle Matt answered.
If it can't go on land, I guess we'll be good, Wes said.
When we had clocked out for the night, I kept watch for the monster with the AR-15, since it was the only gun that we had on us beside the .357. In hindsight, I had no idea why we didn't leave right then and there. I guess we just wanted to prove that we were three badasses who weren't afraid of shit. After 20 minutes passed, I got bored and decided to pass the time by playing Angry Birds. When I went to wake Uncle Matt for his watch shift, I heard a loud, alligator-like hissing noise coming from the bushes where Wes pissed. However, the small growl that followed the hissing was nothing that an alligator would sound off. I slowly and cautiously walked up to the bush, gun tightly grasped in my hand. I turned on its underbarrel flashlight, and I used the night vision scope that was attached to see what was in there. I aimed the flashlight at the bush, and what I saw would make even the toughest folk shit themselves. It was a large, grayish humanoid creature with fin-like webs on its forearms. It also had webbing on its three-toed feet. It had a tail resembling that of a catfish, black spikes on its back, three-fingered hands with sharp claws, and a maw filled with pointed teeth, as well as yellow eyes with black slanted pupils like that of a snake. Its left eye looked blind from what looked like a scar from a blade underneath. It hissed at me as it opened its mouth, clearly feeling threatened.
Holy crap!
I yelled as I fired nearly the entire magazine at it while screaming my lungs out from fear. I must have hit it because it shrieked in pain as it darted past me on all fours and back into the water. I ran to the tents to see Wes and Uncle Matt up with machetes in hand, lowering them with relief when they saw me.
Are you okay, Roger?
Uncle Matt asked, concerned.
Yeah, I managed to get a good shot at it and it ran off into the water.
Let's just get our asses back to the house before the SOB comes back,
Wes said as we all ran to the car, with nothing but our weapons, leaving all the other shit behind. We sped the hell out of there as soon as we got to the car. Uncle Matt called the police about what had happened while me and Wes had a couple more beers to process what happened. The next morning, we went to retrieve our stuff. Several police cruisers were already there. Our tents and everything else were mostly untouched. But all of our food was predictably gone, and our coolers were completely trashed with huge claw marks, marks unlike anything I've ever seen.
Better that than be eaten than us, Wes said.
Yeah, no crap, I said. We talked to the sheriff for a little bit about what we saw. He said he wouldn't have believed us if it was not for the blue-colored blood that they retrieved.
Blood? Uncle Matt asked.
Yep. Whatever you shot definitely wasn't no gator or anything around here. In my 38 years in the Force, I've never had a case like this. If you guys promise to keep quiet about this, I got some cash waiting, said the sheriff as we got our tents and fishing gear. They seized our destroyed coolers for evidence, which we obviously didn't mind, as the sheriff had wrote us a massive check. The number I won't disclose. After the incident, we didn't talk about the river creature, as my uncle called it, since. Present day, and we still haven't seen or heard of it to this day. Now I'm 28 and married to my beautiful wife of 5 years. I only fear one thing. What if there are a whole species of those things lurking in the river somewhere, waiting for their next unsuspecting meal? I don't know what the hell that town is hiding, but I preferably don't want nothing to do with any of it ever again. My advice, if you're camping by the Mississippi River, please have some protection. Anything. I'll update you guys if anything else happens.
When I was young, my parents used to warn me about Crow Hill Park. I expected many kids growing up around that area received the same kind of warnings. There had been a few stabbings which had made it to the local news, and parents were understandably spooked. It was safe enough during the day, and in fact was a popular spot to hang out after school. Come nightfall, however, the lack of any lights or cameras made it a dangerous place to be alone. Even setting aside the possibility of running into someone shady, the ground was uneven and hilly, and you could easily end up injuring yourself in the dark. Of course, I now know that there are things far more dangerous than criminals or rough terrain out there. For much of my early childhood, my parents' warnings were more than effective. The weirdest part about it was the fact that they even felt the need to warn me in the first place. What kind of kid wants to go to the park at night? I just chalked it up to overprotectiveness. I was an only child, and they tended to treat me as if I was made of porcelain. Nevertheless, I listened to them, perhaps at first more out of apathy than genuine obedience. That was until an incident in my preteen years gave me a new perspective on the matter. I didn't know Connor Jameson. Well, that's not exactly true. Like just about everyone in the school, I knew of Connor. He tended to hang around on the periphery of social groups, and when asked, most people would have something positive, if not particularly insightful, to say about him. Academically, he was in many ways a perfect student, well-organized and high-achieving, though never enough to be stuck in the dreaded label of gifted. He was the kind of person teachers struggled to come up with things to say about come parents' evening. In school, I can't say I ever interacted with him that much. Pretty much, the most I saw of him was on my way to and from school. He lived nearby, so our journeys were pretty similar. There was one major difference, however. His took him directly through Crow Hill Park. I've pieced together what happened from secondhand accounts. Connor rarely got into trouble, but on this one particular day, he got involved in a fight between two other boys. Given how schools are, I'm inclined to believe that involved simply meant in the area or trying to break it up. But whatever the case, all three ended up in an after-school detention. Late autumn was slowly turning into early winter. And so it was that, by the time Connor was on his way home, it was already approaching nightfall. He would never make it. It was reported as a stabbing, likely a mugging gone wrong, but they never managed to catch the killer. The strangest thing was that the cops apparently refused to search the park until morning, a matter which led to a lawsuit that never went anywhere. I remember walking past the police cordon on my way to school. Mr. Jameson, Connor's father, was talking to them, brief and anger evident in his voice. Above all else, though, he looked tired, an exhaustion that went far deeper than just a lack of sleep. That haunted expression would stay with me, and for a while I avoided the park even in daytime. With time, however, my fear subsided. Perhaps it was the impersonable nature of the whole thing. But though I had been horrified by the event, I had never truly felt that it could happen to me. Over the summer, I picked up running. My parents always insisted that I try to keep up with some kind of exercise, and I was getting old enough to agree with them. I never cared much about my appearance, but I did see the value of staying healthy and maintaining routines. Until recently, my preferred route was a big loop through the park. Connor's death was about 5 years in the past, and any qualms I may have once had were long since buried. Though at first it had been difficult, I quickly found myself enjoying the daily run. Beyond the euphoria of my runner's high, Crow Hill Park in the daylight could only be described as beautiful. Sturdy oaks, ancient yews, and delicate aspens stood like sentinels, shielding the park from the traffic of the nearby road, and allowing the only sounds of wind and birdsong to ring through the crisp autumn air. On either side of the path, the grass grew long and healthy, unmolested by lawnmowers. Dotted throughout the park was several large ponds, which I always made a point of going past on my runs. Occasionally, I even remembered to bring some birdseed for the ducks, and for the ravens, which roosted throughout the park. For several months, that was all it was to me, a nice green place where I could run in peace. Last week, that all changed. I had had an unusually large amount of homework to catch up on, and by the time I started my run, the sun was already low in the sky. Hesitation gripped me as I approached the entrance to the park. And for the first time in many months, my parents' warnings gnawed at the back of my mind. With age comes wisdom, but also comes a loss of sensitivity. I was at the particular unfortunate age where I had lost the awareness of childhood, but had not yet gained the experience that comes with adulthood. Had I been younger, perhaps I would have listened to that horrible feeling in my gut, which screamed at me to leave. Had I been older, maybe my rational mind would have convinced me to turn around with 100 different reasons why running through Crow Hill Park at night was a bad idea. But as it was, I simply ignored the alarm bells and carried on, driven forward by a misplaced sense of adolescent invulnerability. My confidence quickly came under challenge, and though I tried to maintain a steady pace, I couldn't keep my legs from moving just a little bit faster. I desperately tried to keep my mind off the darkness, to reach that state where nothing mattered except putting one foot in front of the other. But every time the fear started to subside, some unseen noise would quickly reignite it. The trees, which had been peaceful guardians during the day, now seemed like giants out of some old fairy tale, their crooked forms looming far above me, blocking out even what little light there was. Wind blew through their branches, lending them dreadful voices that howled and wailed in the dark. Every bush and bramble took on an eldritch shape, and my panicked mind threw up red flags everywhere I looked. I was about halfway through my run, and already scared out of my mind when I heard a twig snap, somewhere off on the side of the path. Every nerve in my body froze at the sound, but I kept moving, telling myself it was probably just an animal. Another snap. If I was scared before, I was terrified now. I cursed my stupid, foolish bravery. Nothing mattered more now than getting out of that damned park. Because, and my blood curled as realization hit me, I was definitely not alone. The first snap could have been some animal, the second a coincidence. But as I broke out into a full-on sprint, there were several snaps in quick succession, and the tall grass to my left rustled as something kept up pace with me. Adrenaline flooded through me as I ran faster than I ever had before. Fatigue and exhaustion were distant concerns compared to the wave of fear which carried me forward. Yet no matter how quickly my legs moved, my hunter kept up pace with ease. Perhaps it had been a mistake to run, to bolt like a prey animal. My eyes flicked from side to side frantically, trying to both keep it in view and watch the ground in front of me. I caught glimpses of it through gaps in the foliage, something large and quadrupedal, with what seemed to have dark fur. I had assumed it was a dog if not for the way it pursued silently, not a bark or howl to announce its presence. Without warning, it lunged. I yelled, diving away from it and off the path as something stabbed at my side. My leg caught on something. I tripped forward, tumbling down a slope which I hadn't noticed in the darkness. Brambles, rocks, and thorny branches ripped and scraped at my skin as I fell, and the wind was knocked out of me. I stumbled painfully to my feet, bleeding from the gash on my flank. Bruises and tiny cuts covered every inch of my body, and my ankle had been twisted in the fall. That's when I got my first good look at the creature. Moonlight reflected off its mirrored eyes, making them appear to glow in the dark. Its otherwise mammalian features were contrasted by its vivid talons and jet-black beak, the latter of which glistened with my blood. It slowly began to move towards me, feline gait casual and unhurried. I was in no state to escape, and it knew that.
Stay back,
I yelled, slowly moving backwards. It continued forward, and before long, the rough bark of a tree pressed up against my back. The wicked beak opened, and the monster let out a sound which was somewhere between a hyena's laugh and a raven's caw. I wonder if this was what happened to Connor, a sudden and lonely end in a cold, dark place at the hands of some unnatural terror. But that was not to be my fate.
Hey!
The creature cocked its head to the side and shrieked as the beam of a torch swept across it. It scrambled back away from the light. Mr. Jameson stood there, an oversized torch in one hand.
Can you walk?
He asked, keeping the torch trained on the creature. I nodded mutely. The thing stalked us all the way to the edge of the park, lurking at the edge of the shadows. A few times it tested us, rustling forward until we could train the light on it and drove it away, but it never managed to close the distance. Once we were past the fence that separated Crow Hill from the street, it simply continued to stare at us unblinking from the darkness.
Don't worry, Mr. Jameson reassured me. It can't pass the threshold.
How do you know? I threw an uneasy glance back towards the park, meeting the creature's malevolent eyes for a second. A shiver ran down my spine.
You went to the same school as Connor, didn't you?
I nodded. The silence spoke for itself.
People don't like to bring it up, but everyone around here knows something's wrong with Crow Hill. Maybe they don't know exactly why. Hell, even I don't know everything. But there's a general sentiment among people that it's a bad place to be at night.
So what do you know?
Curiosity had replaced my fear, now that there was no immediate danger. Mr. Jameson sighed. Ever since what happened, I've been doing research. Call it an obsession, I don't care. I have no clue what that thing is or where it came from. But it's been here before us. Probably here before the Romans as well. He paused, as in considering. I reckon they built the park around it to contain it. How? I have the slightest idea. All I know is that it doesn't go past the fence and doesn't like the light. He chuckled slightly. If Crow's Hill's a prison, then I suppose I'm the closest thing that it's got to a warden. Been keeping watch every night since my son. Good thing, too, or else you would have been a goner. We both turned our gazes into the darkness beyond the fence. The creature was gone. My parents arrived a couple of minutes later, followed by tearful hugs and a half-hearted lecture. Thankfully, my wounds weren't bad enough to require medical attention, though the ones on my side would definitely scar. Once again, the official story the cops came up with was a stabbing. I considered repeating my narrative, but decided against it. I just have to be sent to a therapist. My parents believed my story, however. They always felt there was something more than muggers or drug dealers going on there, even though they haven't been able to give it a concrete form until then. I took a break from running for about a week, but recently I've started up again. My new route stays well clear of the park, and always make sure to be back home before sundown. The scenery may not be as nice, but at least I'm not at risk of being attacked. Understandably, I'm not particularly keen on Cronhill Park these days, even in the daytime. Now that I know what to look for, I see that thing's luminous eyes in every dark corner of the place, hiding in dense thickets of shadowed canopies, watching and waiting. Sometimes it catches me looking at it and stares back, and I know in that instant that it recognizes me. I feel there's more than just animal instinct lurking behind those eyes, and I know, and it knows, that if it weren't for that protective veil of daylight, it would have been free to hunt, to eat. So if you ever find yourself in Crowhill Park, be sure to be out before night falls, or else you might find yourself on the menu.